Session number 26979.
Albert Pullen, Reel 1. Can you tell me first of all where you were born?
I was born in Birmingham.
Uh-huh. And what did your father do?
My father was an engineer. He was a hospital engineer.
Oh, yeah. Dealing with what sort of thing?
Well, he dealt with all the electricity, plumbing, heating, ventilation, light, everything.
And did your mother work?
No, my mother never worked at all.
Right. And did you have brothers and sisters?
I had one sister.
Was she older or...?
She was 2 years younger than me.
Right. And where did you go to school?
I went initially to the primary school in Bordesley Green, Birmingham. And then I went to the grammar school, Saltley Grammar School.
Mm-hmm. And did you like school?
I did, yes.
Yeah. What were your best subjects?
Well, I think maths and chemistry, history were really my best subjects.
And did you take exams before you left?
Yes, I took the school certificate exam and matriculation. Mm-hmm. And I got matriculation.
And what did you plan to do?
Well, I thought of going into the police force at one time, but it was suggested that in view of my physique, police might be a good idea. But I left school really not having much idea of what to do, but... In the last few days at school, I saw a boy writing something, and I asked him what he was doing, and he said he was applying for the civil service. And so I applied too for the clerical classes of the civil service.
Had you been quite a sporty person?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, rugby and cricket, yes, were my main sports.
Yeah. So you applied for the civil service, and they took you on?
And I passed the exam, yes.
Mm-hmm. And where did you go to work then?
I was offered either the Admiralty in London or the post office telephones at Rugby radio station. And as Rugby was only 30 miles away from home, I opted for Rugby. So I went to Rugby radio station.
And what sort of work were you doing there?
Well, I was doing clinical work. My main function was salaries and wages.
And did you enjoy that?
I did. There were just two of us in the office, just two clerical officers. And we did all the clerical work between us. And it was about 5 miles out of Rugby, quite remotely situated. And I travelled daily to Birmingham, which was quite a thing. I lived about a mile away from the station. And I walked the station in the morning, got the 7:37 train, got into Rugby about 8:15, where I left my bike at a nearby shop. I then cycled the 5 miles out to Hill Morton and then did the reverse journey on the way home. So it was quite a thing. And I was there for, just over 12 months.
Right. And what sort of work was the radio station doing?
Well, at that time, it was the main link to the continent and to America with telephone calls.
So after 12 months, you moved on, did you?
After 12 months, I managed to get a transfer back to Birmingham, where, of course, I wanted to be. That was my home. And the telephone manager's office had just recently been set up in Birmingham, and I got a job there.
Right. Clerical again?
Clerical again, yes, as a clerical officer.
Right. And yes. So what sort of year are we up to now?
We're up to... let me see. I started on the 2nd of June 1936, so this would be 1937, about July 37.
Yeah, and of course there was lots of talk of war, wasn't there?
There was, yes. There was talk of war from then on, really.
And you were saying you joined the militia. When was that?
I heard that all 20-year-olds were to be called up for 6 months' training, and this was in 1938, and I was almost 20, so I got involved. And I went for my medical and what have you. And it was decided, as I was in the post office telephones, I would go into the Royal Signals. So I was all ready for off, really, when the war started.
Right. So where did you actually do this militia training?
At Prestatyn.
Oh, right. And what sort of training was it?
Well, it was basic training, sort of foot drill and what have you, that sort of business. Mm-hmm. And then... I was in the Royal Signals, and I became a signals clerk.
Right. And what did that involve?
Well, office work mainly. I did some training, helping recruits on foot drill and rifle drill. But mainly I was based in the office, in the headquarters office at Prestatyn, dealing with recruitment and promotions and that sort of business.
Did you enjoy it?
I did.
Your first taste of service
life? Oh, yes, I did. I quite enjoyed foot drill and rifle drill. It was very physical, which I quite liked, particularly at 20 years of age.
And you did 6 months there?
Actually, of course, the war was on then, and I stayed there after the war started. And I was there for about 3 years, actually.
Oh, right. Always doing clerical work, or...?
Mainly clerical work, yes.
So, when the war started, did you want to go and do some active service? Or?
Well, I more or less just waited to see what came along. I was quite happy to do what I did. It was work that I was used to and quite good at. So
had you been promoted at all?
I reached the rank of sergeant.
Uh-huh. But why were you promoted? What did they see in you, do you think?
Well, I think mainly it was just I progressed from one job to another until I was doing quite a bit of work in the office, and I was in charge of a section in the office.
So this went on to what, 1941 then?
Yes, towards the end of 41. We were married in 1942, and it looked as though the war was going to go on for quite a while, so I applied for a commission.
Right. So this was in 42?
Yes.
Yeah. And why did you apply for a commission?
Well, I thought the war was going to last for quite a while, and really I just wanted to do something else. And I thought perhaps a commission, I would like being an officer.
Mm-hmm. So what happened? Where did you get some
training? I went to Chester to a War Office Selection Board, mm-hmm. which I passed. And then I was selected for training as a Royal Signals Officer. Mm-hmm. And I went to basic training in Rootham for about a month, where we did all the sort of infantry weapons, foot drill, rifle drill, all the things that I'd done as a recruit, really. We also had to learn to drive a car and ride a motorbike. And then at the end of that period, at the end of about a month, we went to the Royal Signals Octave at Catterick.
Right. Do you remember any of the people from Rootham?
I remember one very, 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 very well. There was an officer in charge of our platoon. He was an officer in the Black Watch, and I'm just trying to remember his name. Shinwell, and his father, I think, was in the War Cabinet. Emmanuel Shinwell. He was the leader of the House of Commons. And his son was our platoon commander, and he was absolutely wonderful.
Was he?
A fine man, and he certainly put us through the training. He was very tough and hard, and he expected discipline from us too. And I remember one very amusing incident where I was a sergeant when I went there, and I'd got out of the habit of carrying a rifle. And there was another fellow who was also a sergeant, and he and I were always being chastised because we'd got, they call it a dirty rifle, which of course doesn't mean it's really dirty, but there it is. And I remember on one occasion, we had a rifle inspection, and Lieutenant Shinwell came along, and he said to this other fellow, If I have to check your rifle again, he said, you and I will go in the gym. We'll have two rounds with the gloves on. So he said yes. So he came along the line and he headed for me. And, of course, I was about twice as big as Lieutenant Shinwell. And everyone was thinking, well, what's he going to do when he gets to Lofty? Because my name was Lofty. And he came to me and he inspected my rifle. And he said, filthy, absolutely filthy. And he threw it back at me, And he came up to me and he said, "And if you want so bloody big, I'll say the same to you." And of course everyone was most amused, and he passed it off so beautifully.
How tall were you then?
Oh, just about 6 foot. But in those days, of course, 6 foot was quite a high. Nowadays, I mean, my son's about 6 foot two and a half, and he doesn't seem all that big, so.
Yeah, that's true.
They're just bigger these days, I think.
Yeah. So, did you enjoy the Octu training?
I did. I quite enjoyed it. It was very, very strict discipline, a lot of spit and polish, but one got used to it. And in with the crowd of others too. There were about 30 of us in the same platoon. So we quite enjoyed it.
Not everyone got through, obviously.
Not everyone. But what usually happened was, if you didn't do very well, you were pushed back a week or two and had to sort of try again. I was very lucky and I didn't lose any ground at all. So I got through all the way. So.
So did you do any signalling? Yes, we
learned all the signals work. We trained as wireless operators and line operators. All the work that a signaller would have to do in the army. So we trained on all that. Learned the Morse code and could operate wireless sets and sort of do repairs on wireless sets, sort of thing.
So they were training you, I mean, as officers, so... what exactly was the role of the signals then? They were training you for that, weren't they? So as part of
Yes, training us for the Royal Corps of Signals, which is the Royal Corps of Signals deals with communication at the higher level, sort of from the army to corps to division. And then within the division itself, the infantry or whatever, to take over and do their own signalling. Mm-hmm. So the Royal Signals just do it from a higher level downwards.
So what were you told about what you'd be doing in that context? Were you sort of given particular details about how you would set up different systems?
Oh yes, well we'd be in control, of course, and we'd provide whatever communication was required, mm-hmm. wherever we were.
Yeah. And by the end of your training, you were confident you could do that.
Oh yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
It was good training, was it?
It was very good training. Yes. Yes.
You put it into action, didn't you?
Oh, so yes.
Say, did it work, you know?
That's
was
right.
Was there anything left out or poor equipment? Or...
No, it was very good. We did a lot of schemes, went out on schemes where we took part in the various jobs that we would have to do later on. So we were very well trained by the time we finished.
Was there a sense of pride in being in the Royal Corps of Signals?
Oh, yes. Yes, I think so. It was quite a status, really, with signals.
Did they tell you anything about the history of the unit?
Not really, no, mm-hmm. no.
Right. So you left Catterick eventually. You passed out, did you?
Yes. I passed out as a second lieutenant. Yes.
Yeah. It must have been quite a proud day.
Yes.
Yeah.
And right. I was posted to the Orkney and Shetland signals.
Right.
And I had to report to Orkney, first of all, to Stromness in Orkney, which was the headquarters of the Royal Corps of Signals in Orkney and Shetland. And I was there for a week or two, and then they decided they needed somebody in Shetland, so I was then sent off to Shetland.
Right. So tell me about the work of Orkney and Shetland Signals then.
Well, they provide... I know more, of course, about the work of the Shetland Signals, because that's where I was. And we were in charge of the communications within the island. And we coordinated the work of the Army, the Navy, the RAF, Home Guard, Coast Guard. So that we coordinated the defensive link within the island. And wireless sets, of course, all over the place, working to a common control in Shetland. And we were, if anything, of course, slightly nearer to occupied Norway in Shetland than we were to the mainland of Scotland. So it was very essential that we should know what was going on all the time there, if there had was an invasion or the likelihood of an invasion.
What were the defences like in Shetland then?
Well, I don't think they were all that good, really. They wouldn't have withstood a sustained invasion. But, of course, we weren't far away from Scotland. And we did have two Air Force stations there. There was a fighter drone in the south, and there was a Coast Command drone with flying boats in the north. And there was quite a big naval presence too on Shetland. Yeah.
So it was quite a big service community
then. Oh yes, there was a big service community. Mm. Yeah.
What was your living accommodation like?
Oh, in Nissen huts, but quite good. It was a protected area. There were no female service personnel there at all. It was an all male establishment.
And did you have any sort of facilities for what you call leisure these days?
Oh yes, quite a lot. We there was no. I was a rugby man, but there was no rugby on the island because the grounds were too hard. So I turned to soccer, and I played soccer when I was in Shetland, and I quite enjoyed that. And played quite a bit of basketball, even played hockey. So we had quite a facilities for sports were very good.
So it wasn't a sort of too bad a posting, really.
It was too good to be true, really, in many ways. And when I'd been there for a month or two, I hadn't seen my wife for quite a while, and I suggested that she join me. And we had quite a bit of a problem to get permits and what have you, but she did. She did join me in Shetland. And I managed to live out, and we lived there together for 2 or 3 months. I thought that I'd be there till the end of the war. And that's why I asked for my wife to come out. But unfortunately, it didn't work out that way.
So how long were you in Shetland altogether?
I was in Shetland for about 8 months, I expect.
Uh-huh. And then what happened?
And then I was told one day, this was about shortly after D-Day, that I was being transferred to the infantry. And apparently the War Office had decided that with the invasion of Europe, there was going to be a heavy loss, a lot of casualties, particularly in the infantry, and also with infantry officers. And in order to make up this deficit quickly, they decided to transfer full lieutenants, about the middle 20s, from other arms, signals, artillery, service corps, even tank corps, I think. And we were more or less told that you're going on a conversion course and that you'll be transferred to your county regiment.
Right. Just before we leave Shetland, what were your daily duties like on Shetland?
Well, my main job, I expect, really, was coordination of the of Home Guard, Coast Guards and the RAF stations. I had to visit them because they'd all got wireless links, and we'd got the control link in Lerwick, just to make sure that they could work the wireless sets properly and that they were properly sighted and that sort of business.
And did it all work quite
well? Oh yes, it worked very well. Yeah. Particularly the Home Guard. The Home Guard worked very well in Shetland. Yeah. Very well.
They were all local people, obviously.
They were all local people, but the it was recognised, of course, that as they were spread all over the island, they were very, very useful. And two regular officers were allocated to them, worked with them, one as adjutant and one as quartermaster. And the strength really lay in them. And the others were just sort of farmers and crofters. But we trained them how to use the wireless sets, and it worked very well. Yeah.
And you had procedures if an invasion was
imminent. Oh yes. And, as I say, the Coast Guards and the Home Guard were well spread out, and they would have reported immediately if anything had happened.
And what would be your role if there was an invasion?
Well, it'd just be on the control and coordinate whatever action was necessary. Mm. As I say, we were the control link in Shetland, and everyone took their orders from us.
Was there a lot of maintenance?
No, not really. There were wireless sets that worked very well.
What sort were you using?
There were, I think it was a number 10 set. They were mainly they only worked within visual distances. So you had to make sure that one aerial, you could see another aerial from where you were. So they didn't operate for very, over a long period, just a short space. That if you were within sort of eye contact, the sets worked.
Yeah.
And it was all done by voice, of course. The Home Guard didn't know Morse. It was all done by speech. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So you went on a conversion course.
Yes.
To become an infantry officer.
Yeah.
Where was that?
Dunbar, uh-huh. In Scotland.
Yeah. What sort of a place was that?
Well, it was just mainly private houses. Mm-hmm. And it had been an infantry octu and up until just before we went there. And then we were all the officers who were being transferred. There were other places too. I mean, I believe there was one on the Isle of Man. There were several other conversion centres because there were quite a lot were being converted at the same time.
And this was what year?
This was... This was towards the end of... it was round about the middle of 1944, shortly after D-Day.
After D-Day, yes.
Yeah.
Right, OK. What had you heard about D-Day and the invasion?
Well, we knew all about it, of course, in Shetland. We had to... One of the things we knew when it was starting, because we were told that... we'd got to close all our wireless sets down, and as soon as the invasion started, we had to stop. There was no wireless transmission at all.
Why was that?
Well, I think the idea was that the Germans wouldn't know really what was going on if all wireless traffic stopped. There was nobody could give away any information, and the people who were actually going to do the job then would just have the control themselves.
So, how long did this conversion take?
Well, I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks where we actually transferred as infantry officers. We were then transferred to our county regiment, so I was in the Royal Warwickshire Regiment then.
What was that like? A bit of a culture change, I should think.
Well, it was really, but I don't know. I didn't like it. No one else liked it.
Why is that?
None of the officers on the course, of course, were very happy at all. They'd all been trained in other ways and for other things, and then suddenly they... And furthermore, of course, it was not a very pleasant thing to know that you had been transferred to the infantry.
Did it seem like a step down, really?
Well, it did, really, yes. Yeah. Yeah, one thing we didn't like was we got more pay as a signals officer. And we lost that pay. They called it corps pay. And we dropped that because we were a technical arm. And then we dropped that when we became infantry officers. So we didn't like that very much.
So what rank were you now?
I was a lieutenant, full lieutenant then. Two pips.
Yes. So what was your work? Where was the Royal Warwickshire Regiment at that time when you joined them?
Well, I didn't join the Royal Warwickshire Regiment at all.
Oh, right.
I never served with the Royal Warwickshire Regiment. Right. Mm-hmm. Eventually, towards the end of 1944, I was sent abroad. When we finished our training, we were either allocated to Europe or to the Far East. And I was allocated to Europe, which I was very pleased about at the time.
Right. Can I just check this? So at the end of the conversion course, you were allocated to the Royal Warwickshires, but you never served with them?
Yes.
Right, okay. But you were actually sent where?
I was sent to France.
Right.
I had to...
So tell me about that. How did you hear about this first? What was explained to you?
Well, I was told to report to Hastings. Mm-hmm. And I was told to go to an underground car park at midnight on this particular day and pick up 30 Royal Welsh Fusiliers and take them from by train to Tilbury, where we'd embark for France. Well, that in itself was quite a thing, because these 30 Royal Welsh Fusiliers, who had been stationed in in Hastings. They'd all gone out that night, and they knew where they were going. So obviously they'd all got pretty well drunk. And I arrived at this underground car park at midnight to be met by 30 men and equipment and bodies all over the place. Anyway, fortunately, there were about half a dozen NCOs who were reasonably sober. And between us, we managed to get everybody to the station, which wasn't far away. And I got them aboard the train, and I locked the doors and thought, well, they've had it now, so tomorrow morning when we get to Tilbury, they should be reasonably sober. So the next morning, we got out onto the railway station, and I lined them all up, and I called the roll, and much to my surprise, 30 names answered. And I said rather jocularly, has anyone not answered their name? And two men stepped forward. And I counted them, I got 32. So I said to these two, did you join me in Hastings in that underground car park last night? And they said, no. I said, well, where did you get on the train? They said, oh, we got on St. Leonard's, which is the next one along the line. And a sergeant put us on the train. And they're only young lads, and they didn't really know what was going on. They'd got all the kit, the rifles, the packs, the lot. So I said, well, I'm afraid you can't come with me. I haven't got your documents. So I took them along to the RTO, the officer in charge of movements on the station, and handed them over to him. He wasn't very happy, but I said, look, you'll have to sort this out. And then I headed off for France then with my 30. So.
Had you been briefed on what you'd be doing in France?
Well, we knew what the role of an infantry officer was, of course. I mean, our training had covered that, and I knew that before then, actually, of course.
But you didn't know as to where you might be going or what. No.
The only point was I knew that, if possible, I would be allocated as a signals officer, because there are signals officers in the infantry who are in charge of signalling within the battalion. And I was hopeful that I would become an infantry signals officer. And much to my delight, I was posted as an infantry signals officer.
Right. So from Tilbury, you landed where?
In Calais. Uh-huh. And then we went out to a sort of holding camp in Holland.
Mm-hmm. Do you know whereabouts that was?
I can't remember where it was, no. It was a big camp under canvas.
Right. And you landed in France about what date?
It would be early 1945.
Right, okay. Fine. So you go to this holding camp.
Yes.
And what was that like? I mean, how chaotic were things?
Well, it was a bit chaotic. There were thousands of men there, all under canvas. And we're all in tents, of course. And as the reinforcements were required, they're all infantry in this camp. They were just shipped forward along to join the regiments who needed them as casualties happened.
What were the sort of conditions and food and so on like?
It was very good, really. The only point was that there was not much for the men to do, and every afternoon they put on a football match sort of to entertain the troops. And I've got rather an interesting story to tell there. We four of us
there,
yeah surely